Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap in association with Access Sports. I'm Neil Atkinson, your hostess with the mostess. And I've got with me Walsh's Kev and Chris. And I've got Stu Wright. We are all full of the joys of spring after Liverpool go to Newcastle United and win by 2-0. I mentioned there with Access. Access Sports offer a level 3 programme in sports media, which is the equivalent of 3A levels in the recruitment for students to study alongside the Stephen Gerrard Academy for September 2023. Students will get the chance to study and learn skills such as podcasting. Wow. Content creation, marketing, written journal, and blogging, photography and videography. At the Anfield Wrap, for instance, we currently employ 13 members of staff in full-time roles such as this. Access Sports and SGA employ industry experts to deliver the programmes. They'll be working closely with us as well. I don't know if we count as experts, but we're pleased to be involved in other media outlets to ensure students gain valuable work experience, as well as helping to develop the course to make it future-proof and prepare students for the rigours and demands of the industry. It is accesssport.ac.uk/TAW if you're interested. That's TAW. That's the bit you'd have thought I'd have got right. Access Sport/TAW if you are interested and you want to find out more. We will crack on talking about Newcastle United versus Liverpool. It isn't a game, Chris Walsh, defined by the red card. The thing about the red card is that Liverpool are 2-0 up at that point, and an example of the current potency they've got on the counter-attack is the situation that leads to the red card. But it is changed massively by the red card, because I don't think Liverpool know entirely what to do, and the changes that Newcastle make, especially Sam Maximan, come in central hurters. But let's deal with the red card first and foremost. It's one of the funniest ones you'll ever see.
It's absolutely bananas. You watched it in real time in the ground, and you're sort of going, he's coming out here. He's not gonna slide it. I was going with his head. He's not gonna put his hands out though, is he? Oh no, he's put his hands out, sorry, fair enough. And it was kind of like, has he actually just done that? And if you put it into the context of the fact that they've got a cup final next week, what is he doing? What is he doing? And it's one of them where I think Liverpool started so well and they've hit them with two sucker punches that his head's absolutely just gone. Like, I don't understand what's going through Nick Pope's head. And he's a clever keeper. He's not a stupid fella. But essentially, his head's just in front of 55,000 people in the stadium and millions at home, falling right off.
He's got 170 senior top flight appearances, Kev. He's played for England. It's a reminder, we'll talk about both keepers because we'll talk about the excellence of the other one, and he's been one of their most important players over the course of the season as well. It's a reminder that it is, firstly, the most exposed position on the pitch, and secondly, it's the one where you get one thing wrong and the whole house can fall down in seconds, and my God, he doesn't just get it wrong, he gets it wrong times 10.
Yeah, he's had a nightmare, but it's funny because I play in goal myself, I can see how he's got to that point. I can honestly, it's so easy to get there. Because if you think about it right, he's judged Alisson taking that ball with the big long kick from probably 100 yards away. Do you know what I mean? So he's trying to judge the flight of that ball, and what's happened is the ball looks like it's coming straight, and Alisson's just put that little bit of side on it, hasn't he? And it's just coming away from him. So as he's got there and thought, this is approximately where it's going to land, he's gone, oh, fuck, no, it's not. And then he's gone, oh, I'm going to get that with my head. Oh, no, shit, no, I'm not. And then he's just thought, fuck this, I'll do whatever it takes so that he doesn't score, yeah? Because at that moment, his ego's just gone, I cannot allow Salah to go around me like this. And then he's gone, oh, shit. What have I done that for? Do you know what I mean? It's, listen, it's a proper, proper brain fart, and you'd think professional goalies wouldn't do it, but in the heat of a moment like that, once you've made that decision, you're 40 yards out of goal, and you're thinking, I am going to look a tit here. But he did not help himself on that score, did he?
When he bounces off his face and everything, and it's the whole thing is...
I liked him when he kicked Sipien.
That was good as well. I feel a bit like where I've got sympathy in that, I've got, insofar as I've got sympathy for anyone, Kev, it's just that he obviously just misses the final, if you know what I mean. Like, the red card's the red card, you miss the final, and listen, them's the rules, and you know the rules before you play the game, but it is one of those where you sort of do feel a bit like, you know, if they could play one game a season, one card, if every team has one card a season to say, if someone gets suspended, can we knock it down a bit, this might be the time that you might go, you know. And it feels different because he's a keeper, if you sort of know what I mean. It feels different because he's a keeper as well.
Like, it's the most important position on the pitch, like, to have your best one of them there. And they've got the hilarious situation now where Dubravka can't play because he was on loan at Man United. So regardless of what happens, Dubravka's going to get a winner's medal somehow, which is fucking bananas. I'm not even sure how that works. And then obviously our old mate Karius is going to actually play the final. Like, unlucky Newcastle is what I'd say on that. But the funny thing is, my mate said, text me before, he said, I'm going to have a bet on Karius to be man of the match. And I was like, that's a bit of a mad one. And he sent me a fucking paragraphs on reasons why. And basically it's because Newcastle have got like a really mean defence, haven't they? So they don't concede that many shots on target. If they can somehow keep a clean sheet, regardless of what anyone else does on that pitch, Karius is going to get man of the match, isn't he? So a little better for people.
Indeed, Stu, there is. I think it does change the game. And it changes the game, as I say. I think Newcastle respond to it brilliantly. But I think Liverpool are then also then in this mode of, well, we defo can't lose this. We defo have to win this now. And I think it does sort of shift a couple of mindsets. I think there's a bit of Liverpool playing for time, trying to work it out a little bit, trying to move them around. We know we've got that game coming up on Tuesday as well, which I think is also a factor. In a really weird way, if he doesn't do the thing that leads to the red card, I think there's a fighting chance Liverpool win the game 5-0. In that Salah probably just scores, that's three, and then at some point the game just remains extended and Liverpool pick it off. As it is, it just skews the whole thing a little bit, which I'm fine with, because in the end it works in our favour.
Yeah, I think it's the combination though, wasn't it? I think of them simultaneously after 20 minutes having a red card and us being 2-0 up. I think if either of those hadn't happened, if they'd have got a red card with us 1-0 up, I think we'd have been a bit clearer still on what to do, and there's still a game to go and win. But it very much felt like this game is potentially over now, or we can just try and pick them off on the counter-attack, and we invited pressure really and didn't really know what to do. And I'm not really too bothered about that, to be honest. Like, I didn't at any point in the game think we were really, really in trouble. And I just felt that we'd done what we needed to do beforehand, and it then just became almost like a bit of a non-event to some extent. It was dead funny, exciting, non-event. Both teams seemed to be set on the other team scoring, but it just didn't have the same kind of sense of reality as the first 20 minutes, I suppose.
But on that, Stu, just to sort of extend it, and we'll talk about the first 20 minutes, the quality of the goals, absolutely. But the other part of that was, on 63, we do our quadruple sub on the hour mark, but then about 3 minutes later, Eddie Howe takes off Isak, who's his star striker, Almiron, who's his top scorer, and Trippier, who's been his most important player at both ends of the pitch over the course of the season, with the exception of the goalkeeper. And then on 70, Joel Linton goes off because he's got a little bit of a tight hamstring. Those three subs on 63 was, for me, Eddie Howe going, that's that then. And I'm fine with that. Like, I think that's mature. They've got another game coming up, a big game coming up. And I think there was also an element of goal difference could be a thing. Let's just sort of keep it to two and let it go. But for me, that was just quite telling. That triple substitution on 63 just felt a little bit like, if Howe could have pressed a big red button of this game stops now, and Jürgen could have pressed a big red button after Howe's pressed his one, if it lit up there and said, yeah, we'll take that too. It just felt like it was one of them at that point.
Yeah, definitely. It was a kind of shake hands moment, wasn't it? And I think it had been brewing for a little bit beforehand. You could sense, the longer the game went on and Newcastle were knocking on the door but not getting anywhere, you could see that the manager was going to be thinking about, it's only got 10 fellas on here running around, they've got a final next week. I don't want them to take any risks, and I don't want them to be knackered. And we're thinking about Tuesday. You know, the Tuesday night turnarounds, it's hardly anything. So I think it was just sensible on all counts, really. And it's great that we put the game to bed before the red card, because I think it could have been a very different game. And that's not to say that Newcastle would have been more of a threat or would have won the game or whatever, you know, but I just think that it would have been a more taxing game if it hadn't been for that.
Chris, the way it opens up, the way it starts from the Reds' point of view, there's obviously the early chance conceded. It's a brilliant save from the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper on the whole, you know, as a Liverpool goalkeeper, has an excellent night. Come back around onto him. I want to talk about simply the quality of the opening goal, the ball from Trent Alexander-Arnold. And then it's the... We've had a bit of chat recently. It's one of the things you always say about any team, but you say it about Liverpool. What does a Liverpool goal look like? We actually got two examples of what Liverpool goals are meant to look like, I thought, yesterday. And this is a pure example also of what Liverpool, I think, especially whilst he's playing in this role, I think a Darwin Nunez goal looks like. He comes in, he's in the space between the full-back and the centre-half, and he's explosive, and he can't be dealt with. It's an unerring finish, it really is. It's a beautiful goal, really.
It's a fantastic goal in all aspects, because it shows the best of Trent Alexander-Arnold. I thought it was really interesting. Kieran Trippier doesn't do that for any other right-back in football for me. Trent gets on the ball and he panics straight away, and he's thinking, is he going long over my head or is he going... And basically Trent does him the eyes from 70 yards and goes, actually, do you know what? I'm going to ping it into between the posts here to Darwin Nunez. And obviously he's like flailing his arms about it by the end of it, Trippier, because he's like, I don't know what I'm doing here. So it's brilliant from Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's the type of ball that we haven't seen enough of, or if we have seen it, it's not led to the moments where Nunez is getting on the ball and puts it away. I don't think Nunez does much different to what he's been doing generally. The difference is he hits the back of the net. So he takes a touch, lovely touch, and then the ball's there to be hit. And that's what the one thing that Nunez does is hit it, and he hits it early very, very often. And this time it's gone in. That can be refined. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying like I'm not being down on it. It'd be nice if he sort of took a couple of touches and then sort of slither under Pope or whatever. But it's such a finish, and what it does to the goalkeeper and what it does to defenders is you don't know what he's going to do. You don't know if that ball's coming down off his chest. Is he going to shoot? Is he going to take a touch? What's he going to do? And the fact that he can take it so early and find the bottom corner in the way that he did is really, really positive. He reminds me, probably a bit of a bad shout, but I was saying this on the way back yesterday, he reminds me of a bit like Robbie Keane, and that feels like it's damning him with faint praise. But put the ball in front of him, a bouncing ball or a ball that's there to be hit, he'll find the back of the net 9 times out of 10. And I know he has recently, but that's all about variance. And it wouldn't surprise me if he gets 5 more of those chances and scores 4 of them, because that's what football is about. And essentially, Robbie Keane was 28 when he came to Liverpool. He was coached by Martin Yoll, he was coached by Gordon Strachan. What Darwin Nunez has got there is something in his locker that you can't teach, and that is a ball that's there to be hit and they find the back of the net. But he's got Jürgen Klopp there to teach him all the other refined moments of his game. So it was a fantastic goal. It's beautiful to watch. And it looked like, as you said, Neil, it looks like a Liverpool goal, in the sense that I can see that's how Liverpool will win football games and score goals. It's a nice ball from Trent. It's a good run from Nunez outside to inside. And it's a good finish. That's what he was brought in for, and that's what Trent does best.
They've all pulled that way. There's one of the reasons why Trippier's got a decision to make, because they've all come to that side of the pitch. Liverpool have actually moved it around a little bit, Kev, for a minute or two in the lead-up to it. Then Trent plays the ball because he sees the run and he sees where he is. I'll say again, that's the plan. You've got Robertson overloading, come on the other side, meaning that there's doubt in the mind. They know Trent can hit it. And then there it is. And, you know, it's a tremendous finish, but it's... What's most exciting is you can see how that happens over and over and over again. And if it doesn't happen over and over and over again, it's because defenders are creating loads of room for Andy Robertson to attack the back post in the end.
Yeah, 100%. That's where we've been so successful over the years with Klopp, isn't it? The fact that no matter what you're trying to, like, right, we're going to put two on this particular problem, be that problem Mo Salah, be it like the link-up play between Trent and Jordan Henderson or whatever. And any time you do that, all you're doing is you're just pulling the blanket, aren't you? And you're just creating a little bit of space somewhere else. The feet are exposed and Andy Robertson's going down that way. That only works, though, when you've got top quality players, which we know we've got, but also when they're in top form as well. And the fact that they've got a little bit of a look what we've just done here, and it's absolutely worked perfectly. And they've got now a Nunez who scored a goal. I know we scored a few, but there's still just a little bit of an aim. Not in Liverpool circles, by the way, but in like wider circles, like a little bit of a jovial, he's a load of shite him, and he just really isn't. He's going to be an absolute banger of a player for Liverpool, no doubt about it. Anyone, I think anyone who's watched him has definitely come to that conclusion. But I think now, especially if people start seeing it over and over again, they'll be like, shit, we've got to deal with him now. And he's the type of player just by his very nature, the fact that he's just such a big knobhead will attract two people to him anyway. And if you've got two people going to him, Mo Salah's going like that. Thank Christ, thank the Lord that I've been freed up. And even if it's not him, Gakpo now looks as though he's got a little touch on him as well, doesn't he? Another one who's been often criticised, but he's playing in a new role. I think he looks absolutely sound. So before you know it, you're starting to go, well, there's Jota coming back, there's Diaz coming back. And listen, it's a lot nicer to be looking forward to things like that than it has been the slog of the last 3 months.
You happy with it?
I'm a bit more of a Darwin skeptic. That is generally the reaction I get.
If you say Everton are going to stay up later on, Stuart, I'm not.
No, listen, I like him. I think there's loads that he's got in his locker. I think there's loads that he brings to the game. I think it bristles on me a little bit when people bang on about, oh, he brings the chaos and all this. I just think it's making him sound like Ronnie Rosenthal. It's making us sound like Evertonians, to be honest with you. I'm interested in lads who play up front for Liverpool who can put the ball out in the back of the net 9 times out of 10. You know, I'm interested in lads who can do the business all the time. And you know, I've said this before on shows, and Christian said it before a little bit as well. You know, I'd like to see a more refined finish from him on a regular basis, because it is a case of Darwin gets the ball and blam, it's head down and blam, and most of the time it's straight at the keeper. Yesterday, it's great in the corner, it's brilliant, it looks an amazing goal, and don't get me wrong, I was leaping in the air, made up and, you know, singing his name. But in reality, in the long term, I'm thinking, I want to feel more confidence from this fella when he's going through one goal, because I don't feel it yet. And also, I'd say as well, Liverpool have got a plethora of options, and it's not for me, when Liverpool's front lads are fit, it's not a case of Darwin Nunes as a definite starter. For me, the definite starter in the team is Jota. That for me, centre forward, he's the one player apart from Salah, and you can't even say that for Salah this season, but Jota is the player in the team that I think we look incisive when he plays centre forward. We look like, even when he's off his game, like at the moment when he's coming back from a long term injury and he's not quite there, he always looks like he's going to score. We look like we're going to score. There's a dagger at the front of our front line when Jota's playing. And he doesn't have the speed that a Nunes has. He doesn't have the trickery that a Diaz has. But I'll tell you what, he makes me think he's going to score all the time. Even that, you know what, that header that he put wide yesterday.
That was an
absolute textbook technique. It was literally millimetres wide, wasn't it? You give Diego Jota a few more games, and I am dead excited about the finish of this season, because he is coming back more than anyone.
I'm 100% in with you on Jota there. Just going back to something you said there about Nunes and his finishing. There's not many strikers come into the league and play that. I'm going to wait this. There's not many strikers that come in and play the way that they ultimately end up playing from the start. So I'm thinking back to Suarez in particular. Not just the Uruguayan connection, but I think there is a lot to be said about the similarities in the first seasons from both. And the refined finishes probably, what you'd think, will come with a bit of confidence. And, you know, a couple of them blammers go in and he's like, fucking hell, yeah, I remember this now, yeah, I'm onto this. And if you remember his finish at Anfield over Alisson for Benfica in the European Cup last year, where he dinked them.
So he
got that defined finish in there. So I think that is definitely something else you're going to see coming out of his locker. Now, I agree with you. Our probably most natural finisher and most instinctive is Jota. You know, I love him myself as well. But I just think Nunes, for me, I think that the whole chaos thing is being overplayed from an earlier point. I think now the reason he's causing chaos is because teams are shit scared of him. He's so fast. He's so technically good as well. He's got a few issues. He's a bit raw. But that I'm absolutely fine with having the raw materials of a player. And the raw materials are, I'm fucking 6'3" or whatever. I'm absolutely off my head and I'm fast as fuck. We'll sort his finishing out. Do you know what I mean? We can coach that, can't we?
I mean, I totally obviously hope you're right, because he's got so much. He is dead exciting to watch. And I mean, if it all comes together, we have got some player on our hands. I just haven't seen it yet. I just need to get feel a greater sense of confidence when he's going through on goal, like I feel when Jota is going through, or even when Mane was going through. Or, you know, I don't feel that yet. I feel like he's going to cause chaos, as everyone says. I feel like there's going to be loads of chances, but I feel like he's just as likely to miss an open goal or hit the bar than he is to glamour in the net.
I'm sure we'd have been having this discussion with Suarez though at the time as well, which is what gives me the confidence that it's going to come good for him.
I hope so.
And the other thing, the way he finishes though, and I take the idea of everyone wants more subtlety at times, everyone wants that from footballers. Shearer was never that subtle.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said for if you are absolutely hammering it into the back of the net, you've got to be absolutely hammering it on targets into the back of the net, if you see what I mean.
Find the corners.
But there's a lot to be said for, you know, when you end up looking at Shearer's numbers when, you know, effectively he sort of breaks through and, you know, he's 21, 22 when he gets his move to Blackburn, and then suddenly it just all sparks and he shifts from being what looks like a 1-in-3 player at Southampton to suddenly being almost a 1-in-1 player at Blackburn. That is there.
Just one thing on that. What Shearer was really, really good at, because he did just blam it, but he'd always blam it in the corner. And you know, yesterday's finish, it was in the corner, and it was hit so hard. It was in the corner before the keeper could even move. And I think that's the thing with Nunes. I've not got a problem with it, with him absolutely leathering the ball, but it's in the corner, because up till now, most of the time, it's down the keeper's throat.
All fair. Move along, Chris. I want to talk, actually, I want to do a little bit of a statsy bit. So since back from the World Cup, Newcastle have conceded 5 chances five shots, not including a penalty, that have been of an XG better than 0.2. 3 of them come yesterday. One is the Jota header late on. One is the Nunes chance. And the other one is the Gakpo chance that he takes, obviously, to score. That, to me, you know, this is a side who've been really well organised, who've been good at smothering the opposition, who've been good at making it hard for teams. Liverpool rock up, and within 20 minutes, they've undressed them twice. And I think that we've had a lot of doubts about this team this season, rightly so. The league table suggests rightly so on those doubts. The fact that they're back to doing that sort of thing, in that sort of ground, that sort of opposition, on a night like Saturday night, with everything going on around it, says to me, still only green shoots, but Liverpool may be coming back towards what we'd consider to be a boil.
Players find the form, ultimately, especially the front three. You know, the two goals come from the fact that you know, Nunes scores the first, and then Salah sets up Gakpo for the second. That's what you want from your front three, and that's not what we've been getting from the front three in any iteration. Because essentially, you know, we've looked very blunt, we've looked very, very passive, to be honest. And what we saw yesterday was essentially three players doing the best that they could do.
But we looked drilled, I thought, as well. Not just that the players themselves are playing well, and it's interesting, the response to the Gakpo goal. Like, it almost felt a bit like we've worked on that. I always remember, for instance, Gerrard to Benitez in 04-05 when they scored the goal against Arsenal that Alonso scores, and he turns around like, yeah, that was the thing we did in training.
Yeah.
That, to me, looked a lot like we've worked on this for this game coming up against
these.
It felt like
a set piece.
Yeah.
It felt like a set piece. I'd say both goals felt like set pieces, especially the Gakpo one, where he comes deep, he collects it, he pops it off, and he doesn't have a burst of pace into the box. He just saunters. And it's kind of almost like he's killed them with kindness, because they don't really notice the fact that he's just sort of saunters. And Salah gets two seconds on the ball, ping, there we go. And it felt like very much if there was a playbook, you know, NFL style. I know that you love that game, Neil. You know, but NFL style of, this is what we'll do, this is how we'll do it, and that's how it's going to happen. In previous away games, Wolves, Brighton, Brentford, it really didn't feel like we had a plan to hit the opposition with whatever their weakness was. I don't know what Newcastle's weakness is, to be fair, but we clearly exploited it, because twice we got in between the lines, between both posts, and managed to get a decent sight on goal. So I don't know quite what the weakness was, but Liverpool clearly worked on it, and he'd executed it to perfection. It was really, really good to see Gakpo doing that, because it was very much he's part of the team here. He knows how we're operating. He knows what we're about. He felt like a square peg in a hole that doesn't even exist, to be honest, in his first couple of games, because you're kind of going, I don't know why we've bought this lad. And look, I know players take time to adapt, but you're looking at him, you're going, he doesn't fit in anywhere here in any iteration of what Liverpool Football Club are. What we saw yesterday, and we've seen shoots of previously, but certainly yesterday was, you know, okay, that's his role. That's what he's going to do. This is how he's going to do it. And the fact that he was contributing so much, not just in between the posts, but basically in the build-up play and basically taking the ball, touching it, it was a good goal for him to score, because it was basically created and finished by him. And that's a big thing to happen. And I know he cost a lot of money. I know that he's, you know, sort of, he came with a big reputation. But, you know, what are we, 8 games in to his Liverpool career? to put your stamp on something and go, went to Newcastle, scored that goal, and it was basically, I know Mo created it, but it was started and finished by me. That really augurs well for his career.
What I like about his performance is he actually doesn't get on the ball all that much, but he's constantly working. It looks as though he knows where he's meant to be there. And then at the key moment is when he comes alive. You know, you can do a lot of number nine chat about what we do or don't think is a number nine, especially these days, Stu, with the notion of sort of what we've seen Firmino doing all of that. But one of the things that a number nine does is not be that present in the game and then ultimately score a key goal. That's one of the things. But the other thing that a number nine does is work hard, and he puts more pressures in than anyone else, with the exception of Henderson. Over the course of the time he's on the pitch, he's not even on the pitch for the full 90. He works ever so hard. He gets his goal. It's quality.
Yeah, I thought he looked like a player who now understood his role much better in the team. It's, you know, his last couple of performances have been night and day from the first few. Like Chris said there, I mean, my WhatsApp groups were all saying, like, I don't know what he does. I don't know what the point of him is. But now you're seeing it. And, you know, he's a big lad. I mean, he's absolutely rapid. I mean, when you look at the goal that Mo scored against Everton the other on Monday, I think it was massively overlooked how rapid Cody Gakpo was getting from one end of the pitch to the other to keep up with Mo and Nunes. He was the only one who could. And, you know, he's clearly got tools. But now he looks like he understands where he's supposed to be. And I think it's no surprise to me, when you look back at those two goals, who was playing in the centre-forward position when the first goal went in? Darwin Nunes. Where was Gakpo? Right, then for Gakpo's goal, Gakpo appears on the left, picks it up on the left. Nunes is more central, and then Gakpo's run is inside back into the centre forward position. And we've got loads of lads who seem to be able to play on the left or up front. And I think there's a bit of a thing going on here where we're redefining what the number nine role can be in a different way than what we've done it before with Bobby, where they're just interchanging. And, you know, who are you marking? And why is he over there now? Why is he on the left? And where's he gone? And you said there before, he just sauntered in, like, killed him a kindness. I don't know where, think they know where he was. I think he was like the invisible man to them. He was off the radar. So I think, you know, it's really, really promising what he brings to the table now. But I also just wanted to mention that whole thing, that move becomes possible because of, I'm sure we'll come to talk about him anyway, but Bajčetić. The way he took the ball off the centre half in his own half and opened his body up and turned, that just opened the game up.
That opening of his body up was unbelievable.
It was so good. Kid is mature beyond his years.
It's so simple, isn't it? But it's not.
If it was simple, everyone would do it. The way he takes the ball, as you say, and he takes on the half turn and he just comes out with it, and you're just like, fucking hell, man, he's so switched on.
There was two moments of absolute class in that goal. One was Bajčetić's turn and then opening the game up, and the other was Mo Salah's pass. I mean, the run was great and it was sneaky and all that, and we talked about how that's being worked on, but Mo Salah makes that run with the quality of that pass. I mean, he makes that run look genius because that pass is incredible.
Bajčetić, over the course of the game, does a very solid Gini Wijnaldum impression. Henderson as well, the two of them. They don't get on the ball all that much. They work ever so hard. They close down the space. You get to see the two of them do it. Bajčetić especially, that pass, that turn and pass is an example of it. Being able to move the ball up the pitch, carry it up the pitch, be strong, look after it. All the above.
There's a lot to be said. to being able to move the ball through that central third of the pitch. If you can pick it up where he's picked it up, which is probably just on the edge of our defensive third, turn out and with one touch, be over the halfway line. And before you know it, they've gone from trying to close our goal kick down. I think whether it was a goal kick or whether Alisson just had it, I can't remember. But they've gone from a set position, and it will be a set position, by the way, because Eddie Howe's proper drills into them. And they're like, okay, we're fine here. We're absolutely no problems at all. And every pass we played there was played to a man under pressure. Not over the top pressure, but let's put it this way, I wouldn't like to receive them type of passes, you know, but these are professional footballers. But then Bajčetić gets it, and he's got the presence of mind to be sides on instead of square, and that opens the whole pitch up for him. And when he's going, he's gone, isn't he? And once you can move that ball through that central area, which I think we've been lacking a lot, because we've been going wide, wide, wide. And once you shuffle that out wide, you give everyone a chance to become compact again. If it's coming directly down your throat sometimes, you're thinking, shit, I haven't got time to look where my man is, let alone look where he is and then where I need to be. And that's the type of panic that a player like Bacic can bring in, because it's just his natural game is not necessarily all about just passing it the way he's facing. A lot of midfielders do that, and it's a good thing to do. It's a good thing to have in certain situations, but to have the ability to also go with him, nah, this is the time where I'm going to open it up, and it's going 50 yards up the pitch. That's the one.
He's raising the bar for Fabinho. I don't want to sort of say Fabinho is playing better because Bajčetić is there, but I think he is. And I don't think it's as simple as sort of going, well, you know, he's got a bit of competition now, so you know he's sort of raising his game, you know. And it might be the fact that, you know, Fabinho's had a terrible first half of the season, but I think the platform that Bajčetić has given him, which is completely,
I think he's just helping him. I think he's just helping him.
There's legs around him. Yeah. There's legs around him. What it's also doing, Bajčetić, I think it's given Liverpool a free hit in this summer. Because all of a sudden, everyone's talking about the midfield, we need midfielders, we need these midfielders. You could go out, and I'm not going to profess at being Phil Blundell and knowing every midfielder in Europe, but essentially, you know, Liverpool can go out in the summer and he can take a bit of a free hit on someone, he can take a stab at someone for 50 million, for 20 million, and go, do you know what, if this doesn't work out, we can sell him on for profit, and probably, and do you know why it's all right? Because we got Bajčetić here, and he's 19, and he's going to be a proper focal point for Liverpool for the next 5, 10, 15 years if he needs to be. So it's really helping the mood around, you know, when we're losing at Wolves and we're losing at Brighton, and you're going, oh my God, what's going on with this? What is this midfield? I don't see how Liverpool get out of this hole midfield-wise without spending £250 million on Bellingham and Mount. And what it allows Liverpool to do is go in the summer, right, OK, we'll go for that big hit, Bellingham, whoever. But you know what? If we want to go for 15 million, 20 million player, Saicedo, before he moves to Brighton, we can do that maybe because we got a player here now. We've actually got a first team player who's 18 years of age. And it's not that the new man's going to knock him out of the team. But essentially what it means is it isn't all on the midfield in the summer. And that's massive as much as anything else for me.
Still buying three of them though.
Got to buy three of them.
For 250 million ideally.
But you know what? All three don't have to be a hit now. And I know that's probably...
No, I'm buying the idea that all three don't need to be a hit. And I think that does give them a little bit of... Like, it's one of them where they do Bellingham and Mount and they could do one mad one if they want. Like, I'm still not that enamoured with your man at Wolves, who I think looks tidy. But for instance, maybe you roll the dice and see if you can get someone other than him who's been off-linked, you know what I mean? If that was the thing. And I'm comfortable with that. On Fabinho, just quick, Stu. Better again, gets the full 90, does a lot of it with the yellow card, to be fair. It was almost as though the manager was putting it on his toes a little bit, I felt, which I think the manager loves to do at the best of times with him. But I thought, you know, they do Bajčetić off, they do Henderson off on that hour mark. Fabinho was then left there. Does fine. I actually think also grows into it again. I think... If I take his games as two games back-to-back now against Everton and Newcastle, I feel as though in every 30 minutes he's got better, which is what we needed to see because the starting point wasn't great.
Yeah, no, I think you used the right word there. I think over the course of the two games he's just played, I think he's been fine. And I almost want to look back at Fabinho's history and go, aside from this season or the last 12 months, when Fabinho would come back into the team following injury, he'd always take a few games, you know. He'd always take a few games to find his legs again. And so I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, I'm hoping that, you know, a little bell has rang in his head and, you know, maybe the rest, enforced rest, has done him good, whatever. But I almost kind of want to just put a marker down now and almost forget what he's been like for the previous part of this season and go, this midfield looks the best balanced midfield that we've had in ages. So let's go with the idea of Fabinho is doing fine, he's doing okay, no problem. You know, the three of them are working well together. Let's go with the idea of, you know, 3, 4, 5 games down the line, he's going to be potentially imperious Fabinho again, or certainly three quarters of the player that we know he can be. And that could be enough. That could be enough with Bajčetić alongside him as well, and Henderson now playing really well again. That could be enough.
Can we have it's probably another whole separate podcast. There probably needs to be a Thiago conversation here, because I think Thiago's Liverpool's best midfielder. But what you just said there, is he Liverpool's best midfield? Does it actually suit Liverpool?
For the way they play, don't they? Yeah.
The way they played at the moment, is it a situation? This isn't me being anti-Thiago. I think he's a fantastic footballer. Is there a situation where what Liverpool need right now is not Thiago, because he's almost above the level that we need to be playing at?
Well, the right now point, I think, is a key part of this, because I still think this is still about rebuilding a season. This is still baby steps. And where we are in 4 weeks is, you know, when he comes back from this injury. And I think also there's another phase of this as well, which is a sort of an overriding criticism, not least because of how much he called for it, and I've had the manager all season. You get five subs. So the idea, I think, as we get, you know, as it continues to sort of move along this season, and the improvements hopefully continues to come, you know, for me, we'll sort of see where we are then. Because if we feel as though we're motored and we're paired and we've been on a good run, I think it's then a different Liverpool side for someone to then come back into. And also, you know, at the minute, let's be clear, you know, effectively, Elliot and Milner get half an hour. There's loads of room for everyone to contribute. Especially if we do what we hope we do against Madrid. We'll come on to Madrid in a second.
There is going to be a point as well where we need to look after Bacicic.
Yeah.
You know, there's a point where, you know, I don't think we can keep going to the well with him every game for the rest of the season. But I completely know where you're coming from with this, because he is by Thiago. Thiago's by far the best midfielder. But I've had the same in a monologue, you know what I mean? Does he get in the best midfield and all this? And the thing is that's dead hard about it as well. He seems boss. He seems sound. He seems like a real leader. Everyone likes him. And when you look at his stats as well, you know, you look at, like, well, he's pressing as much as the rest. He's winning more tackles than the rest. His passing's as good as everybody. So why is this on him? Because the obvious lazy narrative in the media is that since he's come into the team, he's slowed Liverpool down, or he's a luxury player. He doesn't tackle as much or press as much as the others. He does. And he's more successful at it than the others. So I can't really work it out in my head, but I know exactly where you're coming from, Chris, with that.
Talk about the goalkeeper, Kev. It's a phenomenal performance. The key moments, his key saves, are the ones that come, obviously, prior to when the game's 0-0. That is, you know, that's the truth of the matter. I think that the game obviously moves a little bit differently. If, for instance, Newcastle had scored when they were down to 10, Liverpool would have responded, I think, in a different way. But all of that said, he's still there all the time. He's still willing for Liverpool all the time. He's still doing the business for Liverpool all the time. He makes these saves time and time and time and time and time again. He's the best in the world.
Yeah, but definitely is the best in the world. And it's funny, isn't it? Because a few weeks ago, he passed it directly to this side and he scored at Anfield the other week. I can't remember.
Wolves in the cup.
Yeah. You're like, fucking hell, what are you doing, lads? But we've all got that brain fart in us. But then you have a game like this and you're like, that just shows you the difference having the best one in the world in that position makes is absolutely unbelievable. Because not just because of the saves, but because imagine playing in front of them, do you know what I mean? You just, the whole, like a comfort blanket all the time. Listen, I know if I make a mistake here, it's bad, but it might not be the end of the world because of how good that he actually is. And players like him as well, if you've got a goalkeeper like that, regardless of how poor you're playing, you're always in the game. Because you might concede a goal, or you might even concede two, but you're probably not going to concede more than that. And 9 times out of 10, you're probably not actually going to concede any. Once you bring back the defenders as well, we've got Van Dijk back in there yesterday, done all right, didn't he? You start looking at it and going, well, other teams are going, well, how'd you start breaking that down? And it's nice to think that because of the way we're playing again, teams will have to start thinking that, because for a while it was just like, he might be the best in the world, but if you keep giving everyone 10 shots against him, he's going to concede 3 goals because we're playing in the Premier League here. Do you know what I mean? And 9 times out of 10, the goals will come from an absolute cock-up in our own area from one of our own defenders. If you put him in a one-on-one, or if you put him in a shot-stopping situation, I'd back him over anyone else in the world.
I think you get to see from both keepers in the end, Stu, and I don't mean Pope in this. Dubravka makes 2 excellent saves, one from Henderson, one particularly from Nunez as well. You know, what the value of that is. The difference is that Dubravka is, in inverted commas, and again, I mean it with the greatest of respect, a shot stopper. The thing with Alisson is brilliant at one-on-ones, brilliant at shot stopping, brilliant with the ball, plays the ball that results in the situation that Pope gets sent off, offers this air of calm to everyone. You know, it isn't just about stopping the shots, but it helps massively that he's absolutely brilliant at that too.
Yeah, he's incredible. And also, you know, we've bought a keeper, you know, when we got him, that was fit for purpose for the way we wanted to play football. I think when you look at, you mentioned Dubravka there, and you look at his performance and Pope's, it's different because all of a sudden Newcastle weren't pushing up. Newcastle were playing fairly high until Pope was sent off. And a little bit earlier in the game, Pope had done the same thing.
He comes a long way out, doesn't he? Yeah, early.
And Pope, for me, has always been a line keeper. He's never been a keeper that is a sweeper keeper, but he's been asked to do that, clearly, either by design or he's took it upon himself because they're playing so
high.
He's
been doing it all season. He's done well at it as well in the whole.
It's a new string to his bow, because it's never seemed something that I've thought he was comfortable with. I've always kind of pigeonholed him in a little bit in the De Gea mould, where he's a box keeper, he's a shot stopper, and really, really high level one. Whereas Alisson can do it all. Alisson can absolutely do it all. And do you know what's worth saying about Alisson as well? We've talked about so many of our players this season have had, dips in form simultaneously. But if you go over a long period of time as well, even when the team's playing well, certain players will have dips in form. His standards never drop. I mean, you talk about the brain fart there. I mean, we look at that and anyone can have that one. But that's not standards dropping, is it? That's just like a one-off moment. Yeah. That's not like a period of like 10 games where you're like, what's going on with him?
Yeah.
And all players tend to have that. He doesn't. And, you know, there must be no greater comfort blanket than knowing that you turn around and he's there, because he's so reliable, he's so cool, he's so calm, and he just exudes that confidence.
He's physically really unorthodox. Loads of what he does, Chris, is just, you know, it's stuff, it comes back to, I always, once you know it, and you've got to be careful not to oversee it, but he does things that just do bring the handball thing into mind, the way in which he uses his body, the way in which he gets momentum on the ball, for instance, as well, the way in which he arcs himself at times. Everything about him isn't the way normal goalkeepers operate. On top of his brilliance, he's an unorthodox proposition for an opposition side.
I'd say he's probably average size for a goalkeeper, maybe, what is he, 6'2", 6'3", but it's the way that he uses his limbs. The only thing I could probably compare it to when I was growing up was Peter Schmeichel, but I think he's far more nuanced and refined in the way that he uses his limbs and the way that he closes angles. It almost feels scientific in a weird way that he's processing it. Right, the striker's got the ball here, so I'm going to put one of my limbs out here, and I'm going to put one of my limbs out. It's not a reaction.
Look frantic, does it? No, it doesn't look fast, even, because doesn't have to be, because exactly the angles have worked out.
So it's almost like he's going over in his head and going, this is actually the optimum sort of spread to make for this moment. It's fascinating. It's spot on what you say in terms of, it always feels like he's in control. It never feels like, oh, you know, he's run out here, and this is a bit of a danger point for us. He knows exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it, and it's really, really interesting. I think we bought him in 2018. I think he had that one dip, didn't he, around about when he lost his father. I'm not saying that was sort of correlated, but in the COVID season, he was getting down longer for shots, that kind of thing. He just bounced back, and you'd never sort of remember that it ever happened, because the level that he's been playing at, goalkeepers, I think, go through probably a bad spell every season. I think every goalkeeper probably, or most goalkeepers, go through a bad spell every season where you're like, ah, he could have done better there. Or the fact that he's only had one that I can remember, and it was memorable because of the situation that was going on in his personal life. I don't know if I'd remember it anyway if it wasn't for that. In what, five years? That's unbelievable consistency. That's unbelievable level of performance, and I think it is all down to John Achterberg.
There we are. There is, Chris. Last little thing I wanted to say about the game there, and we can hear it in your croaky voice. It felt like, often doesn't come through for any away support on the telly, the nature of how the away end's going at Newcastle. It felt to me the loudest away end this season. I wasn't there, you were. Did it feel like that to you?
Yes, it did. It was really interesting. Newcastle's not a good away end, because it's so far away.
Yeah.
The lactic acid in my calves are saying that this morning. but it's not a good away end, but it was absolutely bouncing. Obviously, the game state helps that, but it just felt a little bit different, and it felt a little bit, they had something to hold on to. You know, Liverpool have been good for so long. I felt like it was almost a case of, right, okay, we've actually got to be good in adversity now. We've actually got to sort of scrap for this. We're not turning up to this stadium thinking we're going to get 3 points, but we know that if we do get 3 points, we're going to have to fight for it, and we really appreciate that. And I think it was a good atmosphere. Obviously, Newcastle is Newcastle. 3 hours on the train, 3.5 hours on the coach, whatever. Nice stop-offs on the way. That's, you know, it's a good away in that sense. But you're so far away from the pitch, you feel often detached from what it is. you'd probably, it's also being around the back 6 rows of the main upper main stand. That's the sort of vantage point. So to actually sort of feel like you were involved in the game, and we were sort of second row, so you'd look back and you were like, looking back and you go, what the hell's bouncing here? This is really weird. But I thought what also was interesting, it went down to all season tickets or all members. So I think everyone who wanted to be there was there, if that makes sense. Don't get me wrong, I know there was a million people who wanted to be there, but it felt like the people who couldn't be asked didn't go. And that's not to say if you didn't go, you weren't asked, but you know what I mean.
I know
by
exactly
that.
What you mean, yeah. Everyone's opted in.
Everyone ticked the box and went, I'm up for this. 5:30, Newcastle, February. Absolutely, let's go for this. And it was really, really good. And I think it sort of, I don't know if it translates onto the pitch because you're so far up, you don't know, but it was just a nice away day. And ultimately, what was that? Our second, third away win
third,
of the season?
Third away league win of the season. More to come, hopefully, because there's Palace next weekend, and then there's Wolves at home. And the reason why I mentioned both of those games is Liverpool play both of those games before Newcastle next play a game. They currently find themselves 6 points behind Newcastle, Stu. They win both of those, they'll go level on points with Newcastle when Newcastle's next game happens, which is away at Manchester City. So there's every chance, we hope, that Newcastle next kick off, they're level on points with Liverpool, and they kick off playing up against Manchester City. This is... The thing about trying to race for top four is that no one's perfect. The point is that you're not coming up against peak here at Man City where it feels as though you've got to win every week. But it is a big opportunity now for the Reds to make that table look very, very different in the short order of two league games.
Yeah, it's opened up. The league table looks so much different now. You are looking up thinking, yeah, we can hunt them down. We can chase after these. And I think everyone above us will be looking nervously over the shoulder because Liverpool, you mentioned a couple of games there, the Crystal Palace and the Wolves game. But... We've got Man United at home coming up soon, but aside from that, Liverpool have got quite a tasty little run in the league. Four or five games,
with the exception of City, we've now played everyone in the top nine. Obviously, we're in the top nine as well, but with the exception of City, we've now played everyone in the top nine away. So that also is good news from our point of view.
Yeah, you do get a sense of renewed purpose as well from the players when you hear them being interviewed. You can see the managers. He's got a little twinkle in his eye again. He was asked specifically about it. You know, did he think Liverpool should be looking at that, and did it have the feeling of the comeback that we had in the 2021 season?
Yeah,
and he said, yeah, it does feel like it. And you know, that was prior to the Newcastle game, and I think he was loath to go too early on this, and I'm sure we all are as well. But there is a little bit of a sense of okay. Bit of momentum now. We've got players coming back, and fourth is absolutely within touching distance if we can just get on a bit of a roll now.
It felt very much like that season that you mentioned, the Wolves and the Arsenal games away, where I think they lost 6 on the bounce at home, and they might have had I think they won away at Sheffield United in the middle of that, but ultimately it was a terrible run. Lost 6 on their bounce, and I think we lost to Fulham. It might have been the last team that we lost to at home, and you're like, that's it. Like, I think it was 9 points, and we'd play the game extra, and you're like, oh, that's it, done. You know, sort of just have to sort of accept that this season is written off. Then we go to Wolves and we win 1-0, and then we go to Arsenal and we win 3-0. Felt very much like that, these two games, where it's a bit like, oh, right, okay, win these and there's something on. And then ultimately what happens is that I think we end up finishing the season 10 wins, 2 draws.
I think ultimately, after the way you just said it there, win this one, see what happens. Win the next one, see what happens. You're looking, obviously, you've got Real Madrid coming up, massive game, but then you're looking to Saturday and thinking, if you can pick 3 points up away at Crystal Palace, the confidence that'll give the players because of the games that we've lost recently of a similar ilk. You're talking Brighton, you're talking Wolves, you could throw blankets over all these clubs. If we can go to Palace and they're not in a great vein of form at the moment, are they, Crystal Palace, by any stretch of the imagination, and get another 3 points, you just start. Everything just feels rosy, doesn't it? And then you look, okay, we've got 2 home games then, within a week, Wolves and Man United, and you're thinking, well, there's a potential 6 points there, no problem. And I said on another show the other day, I think it's important for the rest of the season that we don't start going for listen, shoot for the stars, by all means, but do it by going for one game at a time. Next game is the most important game we'll ever play.
We'll talk about Madrid in a second, because I feel the same thing about the Madrid game, and I'm going to say it, and I felt the same about the Newcastle game, and I felt the same about the Everton game. Lads, just get to 20 minutes and have not conceded. Just get to 20 minutes and have not conceded, and what will actually happen is everyone will feel better about it, and we're still a few games off the idea that you take that as red. They get in. It's worth saying. The reason why we're raving about the goalkeeper is he has to make the save.
Yeah.
You know, literally, our opening goal against Everton comes from them hitting the post. We can't take that as red yet, and it's the idea that, yeah, I'm just got to win it by just focusing on one game. For me, it's almost like focus on the first half an hour.
Yeah.
Get the first half an hour, and then we'll do the next bit. And they do that in the end. They do that brilliantly.
They're the type of things that happen though, like focusing on getting to half an hour 0-0. They're the type of things you say. Like you'll say, okay, when was the last time we did this? And then you go, okay, well we've done it now twice. And then you start going, okay, if we do it our next game, it's 3. And before you know it, it's become the norm again.
Yeah.
And that's what we need, isn't it? We just need a little bit of lived experience of getting to 20 minutes with 0-0, or even better, maybe like we did yesterday, getting to 20 minutes with 1-0 and then 2-0. Perfect, ideal. But it's got to be built from that solid foundation, hasn't it? Of don't give any gifts away. And we look less likely to give gifts away. Listen, it's a very short sample size I'm talking about. It's 2 or 3 games. But you've got to take what you can find at the moment. And as you said before, we don't necessarily have to be perfect either. We're going for top four. We're not going for number one. So we can have, there will be slip-ups in there. It's just how the players deal with it. And it just feels like the players that we've got coming back now, it just all feels a little bit more grown up than it has felt for a long time.
Bottom of the table, Everton, Bournemouth and Southampton all win. Southampton's wins absolutely from left field, although they have a really good record at Stamford Bridge in a crazy, crazy way over a number of years.
I wish I'd known that before I picked my last man, Chelsea.
they do have a really good record, Chris. It just shows that bottom of the table is going to concertina. There's now 5 points between 16th and 20th. West Ham have got the game in hand. They play Spurs today at the time of recording as we're doing this, so that game against Spurs is coming up. It's the way it's going to be at the bottom, I think. You know, it's interesting. It was a big win for Everton. They needed to get that. But it doesn't show that they've got a pathway to scoring a goal yet. On the other hand, all of that said, though, they look like they're going to be a difficult proposition at Goodison. There's no getting away from that.
Yeah, and I think that's what everybody expected when Dyche came in, is that at the very least he would make them difficult to beat. You know, I think Everton 1-0 is a good bet for most home games at the minute, because it feels like if they are going to win, that's how you win. It's 1-0. Must be a bit of a bitter blow, to be fair, to win 2 of your last 3 and still be absolutely smack bang in the mire. But you know, that is what it is, and I think that's exactly what this relegation battle is going to be. Bournemouth look quite tidy. The players that I've never heard of, I won't lie, but you know, just putting together a bit of a team there. Southampton obviously now going to be interesting to see what this new guy does, if they do give him the reins. He seems like a really, really interesting proposition. I think what it essentially comes
I love the extent to which he used his press conference to say, I've been waiting for this job, I'd like this job, give me this job. But then went and won the first game, you know, to be fair to him, at Chelsea, you know, you do feel a bit like, well, yeah, can't argue with that, can you? He looks great as well. Have you seen him? He looks the part.
Looks like he smells lovely.
Yeah, he really does.
You know, good aftershave. And I think it's an interesting one, because I don't think, what I always thought about this season was potentially looking at that bottom half of the table, or the bottom six, bottom seven, is that the one team will just sort of prop up the rest. And I thought it'd be Bournemouth. And then I thought, to be honest, under Lampard, it might have been Everton.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in that situation now. I think all three relegation spots are up for grabs. And I think 7 teams could go down. So it actually becomes a bit of a, you know, mathematically, you're only going to have half a chance of staying up in a way.
that's the way we need to look at it, Chris. I like that.
But it's I don't think there's any terrible teams. There's no Aston Villa 2016 here. There's no Derby 2008. These teams are all capable of actually winning against each other, first and foremost. I think that's where it's going to get decided.
Absolutely. On his Wikipedia page, by the way, Ruben Sellers, it ends with, he again took temporary charge of the team after Jones was sacked in February 2023 and beat Chelsea 1-0 as caretaker. Legend, keep him our club. Saints love you. It's on Wikipedia, so it must be true. I'm just intrigued by him. I am absolutely intrigued by him. He's been an assistant since 2010, knocking around a number of different clubs, and came into Southampton in the summer and has just basically said, I've been waiting for a job like this for 5 years. Give me this one. We'll keep our eye on that one as it goes all the way through. Madrid, Stu, part of the reason why we're doing this on Sunday is because of Madrid, because of excitement. For me, this is the same as Everton, and it's the same as Newcastle, where it's just don't do anything daft, Liverpool. because this is going to get decided in Madrid. You know, that's the truth of this. Liverpool could win this 2-0, and I'd still think this is going to get decided in Madrid. Liverpool could draw it 0-0, it's going to get decided in Madrid. Liverpool could even lose the game 2-1, and I'd still feel a bit like this is going to get decided in Madrid. It's because of what they did last season in that ground, game after game after game, against all different types of opposition. They came back from every single bit of adversity. I just really struggle with thinking this is anything but. I almost feel like Tuesday, I'm really looking forward to it, because I just sort of feel like the business is going to happen at their place, and I'm all right with that at the moment, because we'll have players back, players sharper. I'm all right with it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm a lot more excited than I was a week ago. But I think we've still got to answer the question in the game of what we're doing about Vinicius. I thought Rafa did a really good little piece last night post-match, where he was talking about Liverpool's fullbacks needing to play on the cover to support the centre backs. You know, when one goes, one's got to stay, and it's, you know, he was giving evidence of how that's not typically happening. When we're on the attack, both are looking to go on the front foot, and I think that Vinicius question, you know, playing in the channel between, getting in the channel between the centre half and the full back, or even just being quick enough to get round the back of the full back and arrive in space. I think Liverpool have got to have an answer for that question of how we're going to handle it. I don't think it should just be a case of same old, and let them worry about us. I think that's been proven time and time again against them not to work. So I think Liverpool just needs be a little bit canny about that. And there's been times this season where Trent has been more disciplined in his role, he's been instructed to, and he's got on board with it and done well. It's got him through certain games, and I think that might be necessary and really free up Robertson to go on the attack. Is Benzema fit? I know he was touch and go.
So he plays. I think he came off the bench maybe yesterday. I'm not quite sure.
No, he didn't. He
wasn't even on the bench. Well, there we go. I knew that he didn't play 90 essentially, so he played zero. I think they're managing his minutes. So ultimately, the answer is no, he's not fully fit, if that makes sense. I think he'll play, but I don't think he's fully fit.
Cruz isn't fit, is he?
Cruz wasn't on the bench and didn't feature. Ceballos started in midfield with Modric in there. Nacho played right back, and he had Alaba left back. Carvajal came on as the game wore on. Asensio came on as the game wore on, but he started with Valverde right, Rodrigo central, and Vinicius Junior on the left-hand side. Also, it was a game that was in the balance all the way through. They had to do a full 90. They make it 1-0 on 78 and 2-0 in injury time. So there was no hiding places for
Osasuna.
Yeah, there was no hiding places for Madrid, Stu. So, you know, I think they're a funny side. They got beat at Leipzig in the competition. They drew with Shakhtar in the competition earlier this season. This is my sort of... But I think in their minds, they know, well, we're going back to our place, and we think our place is our place.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I do think it's almost... It's just a bit of what, you know, I hope I'm proven wrong from a Liverpool point of view. You know, don't get me wrong, I'd love an AS Roma-style Liverpool turn-up, but I just don't quite see that in us at the minute. And I don't quite see us doing that to them at the minute. I think it's going to be a great night at Anfield. Everyone's going to be up for it. I just feel a little bit like we're going to get the warm up for the main event, which is happening in a few weeks. But I could be wrong.
I think one or two, I think it's possible though there could be decisive blows either way. Though I get what you're saying. Inevitably, it has to be. The game will be won or lost. The leg will be won. The tie will be won or lost in the away leg. But I think what happens at Anfield could be decisive, and Liverpool should be looking to strike some blows there. You know, if Liverpool can get, you know, take a couple of goals lead over there, even a one goal lead, give Madrid something to think about, to have to force at their own ground, that might be to our advantage. But you know, you do look, even with the players that they're missing. You know, you're looking at that formation that they had yesterday, and you know, with Vinicius on one side and Valverde on the next. I mean, Valverde's
lovely player.
Some player as well. So they are going to pose Liverpool questions, and they're going to be a threat. They're going to be in our heads inevitably over it because of the history we've got with them as well, with such a close period of time as well. So, but it'd be great if we can just hit them even in a home game, even if we can play on the counter and hit them with the pace of Darwin and the dagger that is Jota if he's back in the team. That'd be lovely.
Yeah, I the fact that we've got back to a functional midfield makes me a lot more confident than I would have been if we were still trying to sort of muddle through with this 2-1. And it's mad to call it the Thiago problem. I said this on a show the other week as well. I'm much happier with three very much is our job, Gino and Alden type midfielders in that game, especially as the thing, I didn't see the Rafa thing, but the importance of covering fullbacks so as not to be hit on our attack. Well, you don't necessarily need the fullbacks to do that covering, do you? You can, it's Henderson on the one side and Batic on the other. And that's probably where our greatest threat and strength comes from, because we can try and overload and we can commit and we can be thinking, okay, well, listen, if it goes wrong, they can score because they're great, but there's less of a chance of them just carving the way through us like there was a couple of weeks ago. So, listen, the European Cup against Real Madrid, what's not to love?
Is Courtois still out?
Courtois back.
Courtois is back, okay. I don't know if it is a blow. I mean, you've got the final in your head, haven't you? Because obviously he's the man of the match.
He's often been excellent against us, is what I would say.
It's quite annoying, isn't it?
When he was at Chelsea as well, like there was a couple of League Cup games where he just from nowhere turned. You know, he didn't turn into Levi Ashton. He's one of the best goalkeepers in the world.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about that in general. But it's like he goes up to another level when he plays against the Reds sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, we are as a team in a very different place to what we were in May 2022. There's no getting away from that. But ultimately, we absolutely pulled their kegs down and should have won the game. And I don't know if we have this sort of perception of Real Madrid and what they are, and if that's actually true, if that makes sense. Because I think if you look back to what they did in Europe last season, it was a ridiculous run, and I think we got so caught up in our own bid to an immortality that we forgot that basically they'd come back in ridiculous circumstances in the last 16, in the quarterfinals, and destiny was on their side as well. We thought destiny was on our side. It could only be on one side, basically, and it was theirs.
I mean, in the knockouts last season, they lose three games. Yeah. And it's worth dwelling on the fact that they lose three games. They turn it around in Paris Saint-Germain in no time, and Paris Saint-Germain absolutely quake. They get a really good win at Chelsea, but then Chelsea go there and Chelsea deserve to go through ultimately. And City beat them 4-3, and they were hanging on for dear life against City. But, and this is the point for me, Chris, is that when they feel it, they feel it. And that's why I'm not saying Liverpool can't land blows. That's not my point here. My point is that they'll feel until the final whistle goes at the end of the game at their place, like they've got not just every chance, they'll have this weird feeling that they're favourites.
No,
and I'm sort of alright with that, genuinely. I think all of that plays into our favour a tiny little bit. I almost want them to feel like that, because that's how, for instance, you effectively hit teams on the counter, is when they're thinking, no, this is coming our way. But that's also the other reason why I think they'll turn up and be very, very patient as well, and if anything, try to kill the game from being much of an event.
And ultimately, it's Ancelotti. It's the Champions League. He knows what he's doing, and I think that's how he will approach it. I think I can see Tuesday being quite drab, to be honest. I think what their big purpose will be, because ultimately they haven't had this team hasn't had an Anfield European night. Yes, they did, but it was empty. What their purpose will be, first 15-20, just very similar to Liverpool. Just don't make a mistake. Don't mess up. Don't give them a scrap of anything to hold on to. Keep it to 0-0 on 20 and then see where they go. And it'll be really interesting to see if that is the approach. That's what I think the approach will be. I think it's easy to forget, basically, that, you know, ultimately, these are, you know, in terms of European, they are the ultimate European royalty. I know we say we are, but, you know, what they've done speaks for itself. They won 3 years on the bounce, including against us. They go, you know, sort of, what I think what Real could end up doing, though, is that it's a bit like us in the cup competitions and domestic cup competitions, where it feels like it's all or nothing. So it's one of them where if they're not feeling it, Neil, I think that's where we've got the opportunity, because, you know, they go out to Ajax and they go out to, was it Atalanta? You know, if they're not feeling it, they could easily just fold, capitulate, and we can make a real statement there. It just depends which Real turn up and if they feel like this is their year of destiny again, because they get it in the head. You know, we've won it twice. We've won it three times. We keep on coming back. When they feel like their name's on the trophy, they etch it on themselves.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. But when it's not like that, anything's possible.
Big night. Can't wait. Tuesday, everything you'll need on the Anfield Wrap. Download the app before and after that one against Real Madrid. It will be an absolute pleasure to be at Anfield on Tuesday night. Everyone will bounce in there the same way they bounced into Newcastle United. Hopefully the players will do the same thing, because if there's one thing, they now know what things are. They know what a Liverpool goal looks like. They know what a Liverpool goal is. We've seen four different types of them across the last two games. It's been great to see. Thank you very much to Stu, to Kev, and to Chris. Who knew this season is not over? A long, long, long way, way, way away from that. Sports Social Podcast Network.